Well, as I mentioned, on Saturday, the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra returns to Miller Auditorium for an 8 o'clock program featuring a massive and fascinating work by Gustav Mahler you just don't get to hear every day. It's called Das Lied von der Erde, or The Song of the Earth. There are other fantastic things about this concert we'll be talking about as well, but I'd like to introduce my guests returning to WMUK. And for the first time on Classical WMUK, we have Julian Quarty joining us again, the music director of the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra. Hello.
Good morning, Karen.
Good morning.
Great to be here again.
I am so happy to see your face. Oh, my goodness.
Likewise.
I know it's been since, I think, December, but in December, we were cut off by a certain impeachment hearing. And yeah,
that's all done with now.
Yes, we don't even have to worry about that. This whole hour is ours. And joining us, we have two fantastic guest soloists appearing on this concert. You will hear mezzo-soprano Susan Platt, as well as tenor Charles Reed. And from what little I know, Susan, are you Canadian?
Well, I was actually born in England. I grew up in Canada, and I now live in Chicago.
In Chicago. Wonderful. And you studied with a wonderful legend soprano named Jessie Norman.
I did, yes. I was very fortunate to spend about 15 years mentoring with her and as a friend as well. So it was a very, very special part of my life.
Well, I hope we'll get to spend a little time with that this hour, as well as talking about the program for Saturday. And Charles, let me see. You have sung so many places. I was looking at the first paragraph of your biography, Metropolitan Opera, San Francisco, Vienna, Frankfurt, and I'm like, well, where does he live?
I live in your backyard.
I know! It turns out you're here in Michigan.
Yeah, it's great to be here. It's great to get to sing locally, and I get that chance so rarely that I can invite my friends and family to come. So I'm hoping they'll come up from Berrien Springs, Michigan, and join us here this Saturday evening.
For listeners who are not familiar with the Song of the Earth, and I count myself among them, even though I feel like I should know my Mahler catalog really well. But I feel like this hour, it'd be great just to talk about what his intentions were and what comes out in this music. And I think, Julian, you're the place to start.
I'd be happy to. Well, this is an enormous work for large symphony orchestra and two voices, mezzo-soprano usually, and a tenor. Mahler conceived of this piece as a symphony. For him, a symphony was in the ancient sense of the word, was just a collection of sound, of musicians who would combine to form a large work. And this for him was really his ninth symphony, but he was superstitious. He refused to call it the ninth because of the famous curse of the ninth, that since Beethoven, no composer was able to write nine symphonies and survive. So he decided to try to cheat fate. So he called this something else. He called it the Song of the Earth. He actually did go on to write a ninth symphony, and then the curse got him. He was unable to complete his tenth. So he couldn't cheat it for long, but he managed to avoid it. This work it's works on so many levels for me, and each movement describes a different aesthetic, a different connection with humanity or even with nature. But I think it's very important to look and to think about Mahler, where he was at that time in his life. He had lost his daughter, a five-year-old daughter. He had been diagnosed with a heart condition that was eventually going to take his own life. And he had lost his position at the Vienna State Imperial Opera. His life was falling apart. There were these blows of fate that he was trying to deal with. And I think in many ways, the arc of this work, you have such a shocking first movement that rips the listener out of their chair, and it. And it's an amazing. Maybe Charles will talk a little bit about the content. It's a drinking song, but it's an anti-drinking song. It's you drink not to life but to death, and then the middle movements, the middle four movements, are these almost unreal. They don't feel like reality, but they're these little vignettes, and it's all drawn from Chinese poetry. But it feels like we're still living under the shock of the first movement until we get to the last movement, which is this giant transcendental voyage into the universe. And you basically end up realizing that Mahler is giving himself up and saying, you know, I'm ready to go, and actually I'm accepting of it and I'm embracing it. And it's an amazing, visceral ending to the shock of the first movement. So that's the arc of the piece.
People love Mahler. I love Mahler because when the orchestra, it believes in this journey, in the score, in what Mahler is always trying to do, it's transcendent. You kind of you go from moment to moment to movement, and it's just bigger and grander and more like real life than almost any other composer. You have time to even think about your own life.
Very much. There are so many themes here that I continue to return to, and they really affect me differently each time I read them and I listen to them. And this is a work that you can live with, and it changes within you, and it also, I think, changes you as a performer. I know that, Susan, you've spent a long time with this.
Yes, I have.
This is not the first time.
This is not my first time singing this piece. And I feel with all of Mahler's music that it grows with you. As we age, it just addresses different parts of our lives. And I feel, at least for me, but I think for many people, he's a composer who puts the emotions that we as humans go through daily. He puts that in his music, it happiness, sadness, loneliness, exuberance, happy drinking, sad drinking. He captures what we all experience. And for me, it's just, it is, it's a journey. It's life in music. And
it's almost as if, you know, you knew Gustav as a friend and he was confessing all of this stuff to you. It'd be a little embarrassing in the moment or something, but in music, it's completely different. It's transformed.
It's
but
real.
Still so honest.
Yeah, very honest, yeah. Very real with what we go through every day. And maybe there are some people out there from being born to when they pass away that their life is just sort of one emotion and there aren't ups and downs, but I think that's rare. I think we all experience extreme highs and lows and everything in between.
You mentioned, Julian, that he didn't write the poetry himself. In fact, he discovered poetry from Chinese poets?
Well, it's really almost, it's a case of 20th century or late 19th century broken telephone, in fact. We have originally poems by some of the great Chinese poets of maybe around the 7th century, one of them being Li Po, who is very, very well known and very, very, very read even to this day. And at the time, turn of the century, there was so much interest with the Oriental and with Asian, and we see in France and also in German speaking countries this obsession with Japanese prints, and then also Chinese poetry was something that was new and exotic and very, very difficult to get your hands on. So this particular set of poems that Mahler chooses came by way of maybe two or three different translations. I think it was translated first into French from the Chinese by somebody who didn't even speak Chinese, and then was translated from the French into German by Hans Bethke, who wrote the Chinese flute, Die Chinesische Flöte. That is the book that Mahler received and was inspired by. And then Mahler himself, in setting these texts, he also changed them, some of them quite significantly. And the very last movement, at a certain point, Mahler wrote his own text for the very end of the symphony.
Oh, wow.
So it's a real pastiche. You can't really claim it has one source, but it is inspired by Chinese poetry.
Charles, if you would, talk about this first movement and what you're expressing in the Drinking Song of Earth's Sorrow.
Well, as you'll hear when you come to the concert, you'll hear that the first thought that might go through a tenor's mind as they start to work on this is, are you serious? I have to sing louder than the orchestra in this moment? Okay, so it's a gargantuan sweep in the beginning, but then Mahler does allow the orchestra to settle down a bit as you get going and work through that. But the thing about the tenor part in this work is every song does center around drinking of some sort, and every song that I sing about, and I would actually say it centers around community, if that makes sense. So having lived in Europe and lived among the German and Austrian mentality, it's hard to express how important drinking is, and not just alcoholic drinking, but coffee or tea and so forth. And so he seems to have fixated on these things. And so with this opening number, he sets up the scenario of, oh, look, here's this beautiful glass of wine, but let's put it on pause for a second. He says, we have something important to discuss, you know? And so
let's
so that's why Julian said it's an anti-drinking song in a way. And he talks about the state of the despair that life can bring, and basically resolves it with, okay, now let's celebrate life.
Julian.
But he also, in that first song, he also says that at the right time, a glass of wine is worth more than all the kingdoms of the world.
Yeah.
Which I think is also that's a wonderful image, that basically if, at the right time, there is nothing better than a glass of wine.
The Song of the Earth is the centerpiece for Saturday's program by the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra. It begins at 8 o'clock, although you can get a little behind-the-scenes understanding at 7 with a prelude talk with Daniel Breyer. And then stick around for afterwards. It's on the mezzanine after the concert, and you can ask questions and mingle with the soloists and the music director, Julian Quarty. Reminder that tickets are available now at kalamazoosymphony.com, available at the door too. And if you're listening right now, be sure to visit the website or give them a call. They also have folks available to talk to and purchase tickets from, too. I'm so glad the KSO is back in concert this weekend. Let's take a quick musical break and hear this opening. Charles, you said they give you quite a build-up to get into the Drinking Song of Earth's Sorrow, Movement 1 of the Song of the Earth. And we'll be back with Charles Reed, Susan Platt, and Julian Quarty.
Thank you.
That is the dramatic opening of The Song of the Earth. We're listening to Mahler with wonderful guests here live in the studio at Classical WMUK. The music director of the Kalamazoo Symphony, Julian Quarty, tenor Charles Reed, who will be singing that opening movement with the KSO, and Susan Platt, who will have her turn during this six-movement piece, The Song of the Earth. Here in the Midwest, we have a philosophy of careful now, you know, hedge your bets, let's not go overboard. I'm so pulled toward a full wild abandonment when I listen to Mahler. He's saying, no, embrace those feelings, go on that ride. And it's almost like, oh, I really shouldn't, I got to be careful. Do you know what I mean?
Well, as we were just listening to this, Maestro was talking about the life of Mahler and especially the circumstances he was going through at this time. And, you know, he had a rocky road on a lot of different levels as a composer. But in this time, he's dealing with that diagnosis. He's dealing with the loss of his daughter. He's dealing with the loss of his job, that he had, or his identity as a director of the opera house. And he's finding himself again as a composer. As his principal role is to be a composer, and you know, in these final words that we just heard, you know, the final line is, "Dark is life, and dark is death," and you know, he's grappling with the disappointments that life can bring, even though he's also had a lot of positive experiences
and success. Yeah,
and I think, you know, as artists, We have to challenge ourselves to bring the most vivid colors out of everything that we touch. And for me, it's not good enough to perform Mahler by playing the notes on the page. I need to draw out of that the ideas, the expression, the intensity. I need to fully immerse myself in it. And there's no halfway. There's absolutely no halfway, and I feel really there's a huge responsibility on one hand, but also there's a great reward if you can really get yourself into that. And I feel that this piece, it gives us, there's such a wide range of emotions, as we were talking about before. It's so rich, and it just gives us so much opportunity to say so many things.
This is a lifetime piece for a number of people in the orchestra, as you were hearing from members of the orchestra. It's significant to play, significant to hear. And the Song of the Earth is a symphonic piece. You're going to be a sweaty mess by the end of...
You know me.
but you, it's, this is how the concert ends, the Song of the Earth. Why don't we talk a little bit about some of the other highlights of this concert? Because not only is this hugely significant piece, a one-of-a-kind piece, a rarely performed piece on the program, but we get to hear the Stolberg competition winner of 2019.
That's right. We have, as one of our featured guest artists every season, the winner of the Stolberg competition. And this year we are featuring Daniel Raffimieri, who is a wonderful young violinist, and he will be performing the Bruch Concerto. And we heard him last night with the orchestra. He sounds outstanding. I really think he's fantastic. He's going to be going places. He's quite young, but already has a very, very sure musical center, and I've really enjoyed getting to know him.
If memory serves, I did chat briefly with Daniel before the competitions. I talked to many of the finalists, and I believe he was living in New York and studying there, probably Juilliard is my guess. But.
He has just auditioned for Juilliard. He hasn't begun yet. Oh, in fact, 2 days ago was his audition. The day after the audition, he got on a plane, came here, and played a completely different concerto with the orchestra. So that's his life right now.
This is the Bruch, and I don't mean to give it short shrift. It is a beautiful, beautiful piece, but also one of the most famous concertos that you can hear, and you really, you'll just love every moment
of
it. Oh,
it's a wonderful piece from beginning to end. It's got to be, the Bruch and the Mendelssohn are two of my all-time favorite violin concertos, and they're very similar. They're almost modeled on each other. So it's a really wonderful showcase for such a brilliant young violinist.
Are these the two pieces that are scheduled for Saturday night?
No, just the Bruch concerto, not the Mendelssohn violin concerto.
No, I'm sorry, yes. I meant this and the Bruch and the Mahler.
We will open with a very unique piece by a composer by the name of Du Yun. When I was looking at rounding out this program, I was already immersing myself in the world of Chinese poetry and Chinese literature. And then I thought to myself, why not choose an opening work that reflects China in its in its current embodiment, current version. And so I found a wonderful young composer. Her name is Du Yun. She's recently won a Pulitzer Prize for her opera. I think that was a few years ago. But this is a commissioned work by the Seattle Symphony called 100 Heads, and it's inspired by Ray Charles. You don't hear any real Ray. There's a little bit of Ray Charles in there, but you really have to listen hard to find it. The 100 Heads is a strange fish that was conjured up by the karma of a teacher by the Buddha, and the fishermen pull this animal out of the sea, and it has 100 heads, and one of them is a dog, and one of them is a donkey, and one of them is a lion, and apparently it comes from this teacher who was leading a calm and peaceful Buddhist life, but he would often get upset with his students, and he would call them horse's head and dog's head, and all of this karma caused him to be reincarnated as this awful monster with 100 heads. And so the piece is about these different heads that get pulled up, and there are so many different elements to this piece. Some of them sound like noise, like a construction site. Others sound really beautiful and tender. It's an amazing patchwork of a piece. But it's not something that is it's not the type of music we've played before. It's very different.
Yeah, I was saying how rare it is to even hear Song of the Earth. I suspect no one in the tri-state area has heard Du Yun's
100 heads.
100 yeah. Heads. The myth that goes with this. And Ray Charles, I'm still not sure how that they overlap, except that, you know, you got to be careful with what you're putting your energy into.
Yes, exactly. And she's got quite a lot of energy. When you listen to this piece, or if you watch some of her videos on YouTube, she has a band that she plays with called OK Miss. It's actually her band, and they're really out there. It's almost like Sun Ra.
Classical music is still so fascinating, and it's changing every day. I just this is one of the reasons to attend the concert, to find out what a living orchestra is doing, with an art form that is still growing and is still alive. And that's one of Julian's missions with the KSO. Tickets are available now at KalamazooSymphony.com. The box office also open, and the concert again, 8:00 Saturday night. I think I'll turn to Susan now. Susan Platt is the mezzo-soprano soloist for Saturday night's concert. And as we mentioned before, you have worked in Mahler's music for some time. And I also wanted to ask you a bit about your mentor, Jessie Norman, and if you can almost hear her, talk about giving guidance now, even now she's gone,
I can, of course, and this was one of the pieces that I did get to work on with her, and along with having an exquisite instrument, Jessie was always about the text and getting the emotions of the words across to the audience. And so, yes, in working with these pieces with her, it was just getting those emotions that are in the text across to the audience, and she really helped me sort of get from sort of being a little bit of an inner singer to sort of getting those emotions out to the audience, or at least I hope that happens. Working with her was, just definitely a highlight of my career, and she was, along with, you know, learning about the art of singing with her, she was also an incredibly supportive friend, and she would come to concerts of mine from time to time. And it was always wonderful to be backstage after a concert when I knew Jessie had come to the concert, because she'd always come backstage to find me. And I remember being in London once and singing in John Adams' Nixon in China, and I was the third secretary. There are three secretaries, and I was the third secretary. And in the grand scheme of the opera, the secretaries are really the smallest parts that there are, still important, but they're the smallest parts. And Jessie still came to hear me. And after the concert was over, she came backstage with a bottle of champagne. And she was walking down the hallway of Royal Albert Hall in London going, "Where's Susan? Where's Susan?" And all of these people who were singing the bigger roles in Nixon in China were all like, oh, Miss Norman, oh, Miss Norman, what are you doing? Oh, Miss Norman, can I have a photo with you? And I was just like, hey, Jessie. You know? So it was just, she was so supportive, as well as, being such an incredible singer and hopefully passing on some of that knowledge to me.
Yeah, that's the thing. Singers, teachers, musicians, teachers, you're actually passing down generations of knowledge. Yes. And great advice. Keeping your voice healthy is like a number one preoccupation of professional singers. And so when you have that good grounding and a mentor to show you how it's done, it's so important.
Priceless, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Julian was talking about a broken telephone chain with the poetry of ancient China coming to Gustav Mahler through many translations. And I've done something similar with your name, Susan. I'm so sorry. Your name is Susan Platts.
It is. But it was just a silent S for a while there. That's all.
I love being corrected. So just let me have it if you hear something I'm getting wrong. Because I do want to provide our listeners with the best information possible.
Now they'll come to the concert. Yeah.
So join Susan Platts as well as Charles Reed and Julian Quarty with the KSO on Saturday at 8 p.m. Beauty is the name of a movement. It's the fourth movement of the Song of the Earth, and it features mezzo-soprano. Would you introduce this movement, please?
Yes, this is a very different from the first movement. This paints a picture of young ladies by the river, and they're picking lotus flowers, and talks about the sun and the way it's shining on their limbs and their clothes. And then partway through the song, it gets quite rambunctious, and some handsome young men on horses ride by and create a bit of a stir. And then towards the end of the song, clearly one of the young girls has met eyes with one of the young men, boys, they call it in the text, and they're having a little flirt together, and it's a beautiful, beautiful song.
Julian, how does he use the orchestra in this?
Oh, it's phenomenal. He sets it up. It's so delicate. You can hear in the strings and the flutes how they pick the flowers, these little tiny accents. And then the girls are, the way that he sets the text, they're teasing each other a little bit. They're behaving as women do without men around. And it's very, very beautiful. And suddenly he wakes everybody up with this trumpet call, and a huge commotion is absolutely right. And the horses come trampling in with drums and trumpets. And it's very martial and very almost military, but in a fun sort of way. And you get the feeling that even though the boys have trampled all the flowers, the girls don't really mind. It's very exciting for them. And then there is this moment where they connect. The prettiest of the girls and the handsomest of the boys have this very does this have this very unmistakable eye contact, and he actually at that moment he brings the mezzo vocal line down so low and so in this wonderful range and this register that he just, I mean, it's, he paints the picture perfectly.
We'll go back to the CD, but the live concert is Saturday at 8 p.m. Thanks for joining us for this preview on Classical WMUK 89.9 FM. A beautiful movement called Beauty by Gustav Mahler from Song of the Earth, Das Lied von der Erde. The language is German, yes?
Yes.
Julian, and the poetry is ancient Chinese poetry. And a blend of this, what I loved the paragraph describing the concert that said, you know, it's, we're taking ancient Chinese poetry and blending it with Viennese old world kind of taste and symphonic style.
Yes, the aesthetic is unmistakably turn of the century Vienna, but it's, the Chinese poetry is very much reflected in the music. And if you were listening carefully in this particular number, you may have even heard something that was maybe reflective or mimicking the style of the Peking opera. In the middle section, there's this very unmistakable pentatonic tune. And the pentatonic scale, that's what you get when you play the black keys on the piano. And we tend to think of much Chinese music as being based in that mode or that scale. And Mahler uses that to great effect to sort of conjure up this this Chinese landscape.
When I think of turn of the century Vienna, I do think of the influence of art objects from China and Asia, the beautiful lacquered objects, the paintings of Gustav Klimt, beautiful textiles, all part of this incoming fads.
And silks and all of the prints and furniture. The, you know, turn of the century furniture was very much inspired by Chinese pieces that were brought over. And I think it almost goes all the way back to the Opium Wars of, you know, let's say the 1850s between Britain and China. Whenever two cultures are going head to head and are in conflict, it's also, I feel that the cultures themselves become very curious about the other, just as, you know, as I think we have also seen more recently with our fascination with the Arab world and with the Middle East, as you know, as our cultures are coming to a head quite often, we become very interested in how they live and what they do in there, and ideas cross and commingle. When you have, you know, in the turn of the century, you had military officers going back and forth between China and Europe, and they bring all these things back. And it was this great influx of new ideas and new philosophies. And Mahler was very much, he was really wild. I mean, he was, you know, the time of Sigmund Freud and all of this. He kind of wraps it all up. You can hear it all in the music.
And I'd like to remind listeners that even though we have Gustav appropriating Chinese poetry and cultures being so permeable at the turn of the last century, this concert starts with a piece by a Chinese woman composer who is inspired by Ray Charles.
That's right.
It's going both ways here. And congratulations for finding this fascinating piece and a wonderful concert. We just have a couple of minutes left, so I think I'll ask our soloists to, again, invite listeners to come out to the concert and share any final thoughts you have about Saturday's performance.
Definitely.
Susan Platz.
Definitely. If you have Saturday evening free, come out and hear this concert. It isn't performed a lot. It's a wonderful journey to go on. It's the human emotions that we all go through. And I think you'll really just be grateful if you come.
Charles.
All right. Yeah, I just have to say, even if you don't have Saturday night free, you might want to clear your schedule and come anyway, because it's a once in a lifetime opportunity to hear this work and to hear it here in this city. And you know, I first encountered this as a young college student. I was falling in love with the art form of German Lied, which is song, and I found Mahler and all of his art songs, and then eventually I found this, and it blew my mind in ways that I didn't even understand at that young age, and I just know it will blow your mind.
And Julian, you have 1 minute, 45 seconds.
Well, this piece, it means so much to me personally. It's just so rich and it's so rewarding. And every time I've heard it as an audience member, it's changed me. And every time I've conducted it, it's also changed me. And I really insist that if you can come, you must. This is so important. And it's so important for us as the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra. It's a great week for our own growth and for our own vision. And it's something that I'm so happy to be able to bring to you here in this community. And with these two great singers, you really have to be there. It's going to be outstanding.
Let me remind listeners, the concert is at 8 o'clock Saturday night. Tickets available now at the KalamazooSymphony.com website, or call the box office number you see there. The soloist for the concert is gold medalist Daniel Raffamayeri, who is coming in from New York after winning the Stolberg competition last May. He's a fantastic soloist and will play the Brook Concerto as well. Join the symphony Saturday night. There's a prelude at 7 o'clock, and it's followed after the concert by Afterwards, and you too can mingle with the guests here in the room at Classical WMUK 89.9. Thanks for joining us. I'm Kara LaRance.